All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 40 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the elementary class. Today we will discuss the rise of Athenian democracy. So we're finally getting to the point where somebody's going to come up with this original answer to the problems that were plaguing Athens. So today, we're going to name the problem in a very careful way. And then we're going to discuss how the use or the implementation of democracy was intended to solve that problem. And then we will be left with an interesting question. Does it actually do that? So, let's get to it here, because the problem was that Athens was stuck. We know where it was stuck. It was stuck on the Archaic Plateau, where people live until they can create something better. In Athens, the plateau took the form of them going back and forth between some archaic forms of government. Number one, monarchy, of course. This is the most basic archaic kind of government. The rule of one, a single great family, the Medontidae. And they are in charge. And well, the Athenians and other Greeks, unlike the Egyptians and unlike the Mesopotamians, did have an alternative to monarchy, and that was aristocracy. But this is still archaic. The only difference is that instead of one family ruling, it's a whole bunch of them. And they think of themselves as the best, which is what aristos means. Right? So it's all the Eupatrids ruling together. That's an aristocracy. And they made all kinds of rules, and some of them were quite interesting. They would say, all right, the king doesn't get all the power. We're going to take some of the king's power and give it to other so-called archons. We're going to divide it up among the different families. So some people would look at aristocracy and they would say, hey, that's better than monarchy. Because you don't have one person who has all the power and who can, you know, be essentially really mean, really oppressive, because he has all the power and he's going to be corrupt and rule everybody else. Instead, you kind of break it up and everybody shares the power. Wouldn't that be perhaps a little bit better? Well, we're going to see that does not solve the problem. We saw already that if the aristocracy was unjust to the commoners, which was all too common, then the commoners would rebel, and they would create another form of archaic government, which was really just a little variation on the theme, right? They called it a tyrannos. But a tyrannos was basically what? New name, but same basic idea. Which one was it? A form of aristocracy or a form of monarchy? Wyatt, Henry?
Monarchy.
It was a form of monarchy, a rule of one. Now, instead of a king chosen by the aristocracy to rule on behalf of the aristocracy, it was a little bit of a different kind of monarchy. It was a king chosen by the commoners to rule on behalf of the commoners. But we're still stuck. We're still stuck with groups that want power over each other. And at that level, this is still the archaic plateau. This idea that's what government is. One group of people getting power and then basically threatening the others with physical force, that is still archaic government. So, well, we went back and forth in Athens after the Tyrannos. Pisistratus became a Tyrannos. That's where we left off yesterday, when the aristocracy was so unfair to the commoners because of, remember what was the problem that Solon had tried to solve? What's that combination institution where you have people that need to borrow money, but they can't, and then, well, what happens to them if they can't pay it back? What was that that we talked about yesterday? Patrick?
They become a slave.
They become slaves, but what is that kind of slavery where you become a slave because you can't pay somebody back? Go ahead.
Debt slave.
Debt slavery. Okay. So the institution of debt slavery in Athens was what led to the rise of the Tyrannos Pisistratus, because Solon had done his best to solve this issue. He said, all right, I'm going to emancipate the slaves. Which means what? Opal?
Free them.
Okay. And he said, I'm going to abolish debt slavery, which means what? Opal?
Get rid of it.
Yeah, bring an end to it. Okay, good. But I'm not going to do one other thing that the commoners want. I am not going to redistribute the land to them. I'm not going to take land that belongs to one person, take it away from them, and give it to somebody else. So that, unfortunately, was not going to help the commoners get quite what they needed. And sadly, they didn't need it. Because in primitive times, you needed a certain amount of land to grow enough food to survive. And the commoners, too often, did not have enough. So they were dissatisfied with Solon's solution, and they turned to Pisistratus, making him a Tyrannos. All right, so Pisistratus took land away from the aristocrats and gave it to the commoners. But what's the problem? Is that going to solve the issue? Rosetta?
Now the, what's the name for them? Now the really rich people mm-hmm. don't have any land.
Yeah, the aristocrats. Well, it's not that they don't have any. It's not that they're going to take away all of it, right? But when a government redistributes the property of some who are wealthy, it takes some portion of it, usually leaving some behind as well. But that still was not going to satisfy them. They did not want to give up their land, which in their minds they had earned. It was rightfully theirs. It did not belong to anybody else. It was their property. So, how do you make a solution to this problem here? Because now the nobles were going to do the standard thing. They were going to try to figure out how to get themselves more power to take back what they wanted. And this is the archaic plateau of Athens. One group using its power to control the others. Then a different group gets power, and it uses force to control the others. And now that the aristocracy did not have as much power as the commoners, well, what were they going to do? They needed, the only solution they could come up with, which was the archaic solution, was get more power. Well, how could they do it? Well, I guess I've got to go back to our map of Greece. Give me a moment, because I didn't have it up on screen quite yet. Let me just bring it up. Where are you? Map of Greece. There we are. Okay, so let me share my screen with you guys. And so if you were in the city-state of Athens and you wanted help to take back your city-state, well, what could you do? Well, we know that Greece was divided up into multiple city-states. So you could try to go and convince some of your neighbors to help you. Right? And certainly People from different city-states knew each other. They traded with each other. What else did they do together? That, you know, they so that they knew each other, even if from a distance. What was that other thing that they did every 4 years that made them really feel their bond of common Greek culture? Julia?
The Olympics?
Yeah, the Olympics, which were an athletic and a religious festival. The nobles got an idea from this. The Greeks had various things in common that they took seriously. The Olympics were an athletic and a religious festival. And we haven't talked a lot about Greek religion because, well, it didn't really matter so much to the idea of monarchy or the idea of aristocracy. And it's a very archaic type of religion with a lot of different gods and so on, which can be quite fascinating if you want to study it. I mean, nowadays, people have made some pretty amazing stories. I guess there's one out there that's really popular lately, something called Percy Jackson or something or other, and the Olympians. I don't know if that's at your reading level or what, but there's a variety of stories out there that have to do with the Greek gods and the various beliefs in the Greek gods. So Julia says that, yes, she really already likes that one. All right, so cool. So what the nobles did was something quite clever. They went to a place called Delphi. Now, I zoomed out of it when that was not my intention. But here is Delphi. Does anybody know that there was something special about Delphi? It was quite an important site there. Julia says, yep, what about it? Yep. Julia?
Well, I think that was where the oracle was from.
Okay, what was the oracle?
If I remember correctly, she had, like, visions or something, and it would tell the heroes, like, to go on quests.
Okay, right, there we go. Here is a painting, wonderful painting, by an artist named John Collier, of a priestess of Delphi. And so here she is on this strange kind of throne, right? And what do you see is really strange here. Here's a little art appreciation puzzle for you. In this dark cavern, what stands out about this scene that is kind of ominous? Would you want to be sitting on this chair? Wouldn't you kind of be freaking out about something that looks kind of dangerous? Opal?
The smoke coming from underneath her.
Yes, indeed. You know what that smoke is?
I'm not sure.
Okay, so it's a volcanic site. So there were gases coming up from under the ground. And if you would inhale those gases, well, then you could have a very strange experience. People would call that a vision. In a lot of primitive societies, people would take different kinds of things to make themselves feel really strange. And they have what they call visions, which is basically their brain malfunctioning. But they think that that's kind of a neat thing. And so they call that a vision. And so the priestess of Delphi would have these visions. And as Julia said, she would then say these mysterious, strange things that really wouldn't make sense. But, as she said, the heroes or anybody that was coming to Delphi on a religious quest would try to figure out what was the meaning of it. And so the Athenian nobles went to the oracle at Delphi and paid for the construction of a beautiful temple. And this is what we call a bribe. What's a bribe? Opal?
It's like when you try to get someone to do something by giving them something else.
Yeah, especially money, right? So a bribe is usually money, and that's what the Athenian nobles did. They went to the Oracle of Delphi and bribed the Oracle. And what they wanted was the oracle to tell the heroes that were coming on their quests that the nobles of Athens needed help and that Athens must be liberated. And so every time the king of Sparta would go to Delphi, year after year, here's Sparta down here, this very important city that we're going to talk about next week. Every time the king of Sparta, who was a great warrior, would go to Delphi for his kind of religious, we would call that a pilgrimage, the oracle would tell him, Athens must be set free. Athens must be set free. This was a repeating message. Now, why was the oracle telling the king of Sparta this? Well, because the oracle had accepted the bribe. And so the king of Sparta, taking the oracle seriously, decided, okay, I need to help the nobles of Athens. So they were successful. They did what they needed to do, which was to get more power in order to get their way. Right? And because now that the commoners had the power and had the tyrannos supporting them, and they were working together, they had more power than the aristocracy. The aristocracy needed help from outside of Athens. So the king of Sparta was convinced by the oracle to go and lend his support to the nobles, which he did, and they were successful. The tyranny of Athens was overturned in 510 BC. Getting close, aren't we? Getting close. 510 BC. What are we waiting for? What are we waiting, approaching here that we know is an anchor fact of all world history? Patrick?
Jesus Christ.
Well, no, we're nowhere near there. Oh, you misinterpreted. 510 BC comes us much closer to something else. Huh? Everybody's stumped, even though there's only two numbers. All you gotta do is do 510 minus 2. I got you guys stumped. We gotta do more facts practice. Julia?
It was the, I forgot the word. The thing that happened in Athens, it was,
Oh my gosh, all right. Patrick is now raring to go. Yes?
Athenians created democracy.
Okay, democracy, yes, okay, right? We're getting there. We're back to an aristocracy. It's 510 BC, but we're only 2 years away, so what's going to happen? All right, well, there was an argument between the aristocrats because, well, now that they had the power again, weren't they going to do the usual thing? Weren't they going to use their power to make themselves the best again and to get their land back and get revenge on anybody that had taken stuff away from them before? That would certainly be the usual thing. That would mean, however, that Athens would remain stuck on the archaic plateau. So, what to do? Well, some of the aristocrats wanted to choose a new king. His name was Isagoras, and they were going to now elect him, and they were going to go back to the same old ways. But another one of the aristocrats, named Cleisthenes, had a different idea. All right, so Cleisthenes looked at the situation and he said the following. Look at how our society is, the trouble that we have here in our society. We have, sometimes the aristocrats are in power, and when they are, they're mean to the commoners. And then sometimes the commoners are in power, and when they are, they're mean to the aristocrats. And we could go back and forth and back and forth, and it's always going to be the same. We have these different groups that use power against each other, and they're always unfair to each other, and they can't seem to work together. So what could we do here? How could we break this cycle? Well, what Cleisthenes was trying to figure out was what later on James Madison called the problem of faction. a great, fantastic vocabulary word for understanding politics. And James Mazin, one of the founding fathers who studied ancient Greece, of course, wrote this essay called Federalist Number 10. In other words, it was the 10th argument that he had for making a republic later on in history. I'm taking what he wrote and I've kind of boiled it down a little bit. The passage in gray, we're going to ignore it because it has too many words and it's too complicated. We're going to read the passage only in blue. Can I have somebody who's a very careful reader, a very loud and careful reader, read this for us, please? Not too fast. Opal, go ahead.
By a faction, I understand a number of citizens, whether a majority or a minority, who are united by some common interest adverse to the rights of other citizens.
Okay, very nice reading. Okay, so a faction is a group. Now, it can be a majority or a minority. If it was the commoners, which would it be? The commoners are the most common. So, which one? Julia?
The majority.
The majority, okay. If it was an aristocracy, which one would it be? The group. Majority or minority, Rosetta?
Minority.
Minority, okay. Minority. It doesn't matter which, James Madison would say. Isn't he right? He says, look, it doesn't matter which group it is that's going to gang up on the other group. Okay, they are united by some common interest, which means they think only of their own group. And what do? With that group? They do things that hurt the rights of others. That's what adverse to the rights of other citizens means. Adverse means against. So, James Madison said, this is a faction. A group that is against the rights of others. And this was exactly what Cleisthenes was trying to figure out. He didn't have the word rights. This word, which is such an important word, the most important word in all of politics, the Greeks didn't have it yet. So he couldn't think quite as clearly as James Madison, but he was working on the same problem. He would look at the aristocrats and he would say, well, as a group, you rule over the commoners. You force them to accept things like debt slavery. You are unjust to them. And then he would look at the commoners and he would say, well, as a group, you use your power unjustly as well by taking away other people's property, for instance. So, how do we solve this? We have these groups that want to hurt each other. How do we stop this from happening? Now, much later in history, the founding fathers would have a very good and clear answer. They would say that we must create a government that protects individual rights. This is the fundamental answer. But Cleisthenes didn't have that answer. What he did think of, though, was breaking up the groups. Breaking up the groups. What did he call the groups? Breaking up the groups. So he said, all right, we're going to reorganize the government of Athens. We're going to make people give up these family, we're not going to give up their families, but we're going to make them stop thinking of themselves mainly as belonging to these groups, to these factions. And instead, we're going to reorganize Athens. Here's Cleisthenes, by the way. He's the GM. He's the one who's going to reinvent the system. He said, we're going to break up this society into new groups. And they were called themes. As you can see, in ancient Greece, a deme or demos. Very interesting. Very similar, close word. A people, a group. Or here it says a suburb. Kind of like a neighborhood, right? Kind of like a division of the territory. That's basically what it says here. A simple subdivision of land. And then in the reforms of Cleisthenes, it caused the Athenians to reorganize themselves. Instead of being members of a certain aristocracy or commoner group, now each individual became a member of a deme. And that would break up the groups that they usually belonged to. Everybody in the deme would work together on choosing what was going on in their local area, and then the deme would send people to a central assembly where each person would take their turn. Not everybody was there all the time, but basically people would take turns being sent from the deme to the central assembly, and, well, it would be different people all the time. And it wouldn't be the same groups voting the same way. When you got to the Central Assembly, you were just an individual from a deme. And you got to suggest laws, and you got to argue for and against laws. And in the end, you as a single individual person had to vote for yourself, representing your deme, not any other group. What you wanted the laws to be. Well, we have a name for that, where individuals vote in order to decide the laws. Democracy. So that's it. Cleisthenes is the inventor of democracy. He is the one who first developed the idea that you had to break up the archaic factions in society and get people to think of themselves as individuals who make the laws. We have democracy. All right. Now, is this going to work? Is breaking up the people out of their traditional groups and getting them to represent a deme instead, and getting them to vote in an assembly, is this going to solve the problem of faction? Is this going to stop people from thinking of themselves mostly as members of a group? We'll have to wait and see. Rosetta, do you have a prediction?
Probably not.
It's not that easy, is it?
No.
It's a tricky thing, right? Because we think of ourselves in a variety of different ways. Is having a vote going to stop us from thinking of ourselves as members of a group? Let's see. Or is it actually going to encourage us to think of ourselves as members of a group? One or the other? We'll have to see. But this, at least, was the idea that Cleisthenes had. Break up the traditional groups. At least, try to stop people thinking of themselves as members of the aristocracy or members of the commoners. Get them to think of themselves as an individual member of the society, equal to anybody else with your own individual vote. All right. We've gotten here. We'll talk tomorrow more about this problem of faction and how democracy worked in Athens and, well, did it solve the problem? And what we'll do next is, well, we'll look at another society in Greece that came up with a different answer about how to organize itself. Sparta. The society that sent the king to help the nobles in 510, we'll see that Sparta had a whole other kind of approach to making its society. They didn't agree with Athens. And unfortunately, because they didn't agree, even though They're going to help each other as allies against the invading Persia. Soon, these different Greeks are going to be at each other's throats, and the democracy of Athens is going to collapse. All right, but at least it was created in the first place to give us an idea to think about that was better than the archaic forms of government. Okay, that's gonna do it for today, folks. Thanks very much. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, Mr. Powell.